on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and especially right here on Progressive Radio Network, is the fact that all of the shows are archived, which makes it really, really, really easy for you to listen to and see if, there's other shows that you like to listen to in terms of topics that Dr. Zamperone and I have done here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but also other shows that are right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can just visit the archives and stroll down and see what things interest you. And also, we're noticing that we have so many listeners. We're so grateful to all of you. We have about close to 140,000 of you downloading our shows. And we really, really do enjoy having you on board. One of the things that we would like to do is invite you to visit our website at naturalnurse.com or our Facebook page, Facebook The Natural Nurse, so you can see all the opportunities to interact with myself, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone. For instance, we both have offices where people can come in and actually get a personalized health evaluation. And Dr. Zamperone's is in Connecticut, where he is a professor at Bridgeport University, and that's at the School of Naturopathic Medicine. And my office is in New York. But also, we can interact online because, of course, we do phone consults with people who'd like to discuss their own personal health issues. And then we do a lot of education. So we have CEUs available for our education courses. And the CEUs are for many different kinds of healthcare professionals. For instance, nurses can get CEUs, acupuncturists, massage therapists, nutritionists, and many other professions accept the CEU courses that we give. And then for those of you who are not necessarily professional but just want to expand your own knowledge in natural medicine, we also have a certification through Natural Alternatives Health Education and Multimedia Services Incorporated. Dr. Z and I incorporated that organization 26 years ago. Believe it or not, we were just talking about that the other day on our Chinatown trip where we took people into Chinatown. We actually went underground to an FDA-registered herbal manufacturing facility and did Qigong in the park in Chinatown. Just had a wonderful day. And I think that's the 50th time that we have done that trip. We do that twice a year. And people join in with us. They actually come to Chinatown with us. And then our other trip in March, we actually go to the island of Jamaica and live with indigenous native people in Jamaica, in the north country of Jamaica, completely undeveloped. And we live with shamanic indigenous bush doctors for about 5 days. It's a fabulous experience. It is open to the public. We also take students, and you can get course credit for coming with us on that trip as well. Of course, we've written many, many books, including Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and The Natural Medicine Chest, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, and many other books. So go to naturalnurse.com, look around at schedules for all the classes. You can look at education about the certification courses. You can look online at all the different books that we have and actually click on them to order them. It goes right to Amazon. And interact with us in many different ways, both virtually and in person. So thank you so much for joining us. Today's show, we're going to focus on a topic that is probably in your life currently if you're listening to this show live. And if you're not, because I know we have lots of archive listeners, probably you have encountered this issue sometime during the year, wherever you are. And that is the issue of leaf blower madness. And that's about the fact that, you know, you're sitting around in your house and it's just not quiet and it's just not comfortable. And part of that is because you're being inundated with these very tremendously loud sounds and all kinds of noxious fumes. And so we have two experts today to talk about leaf blower madness. We have with us Dr. Jamie Banks. She is the executive director of Quiet Communities. Wouldn't that be lovely? A quiet community that conducts research and provides education and outreach to help communities transition to clean, quiet, sustainable, and healthy landscape maintenance practices. And she worked in healthcare economics and health outcomes research, and now works in the area of environmental health and science. She founded Planet Rewards and also Quiet Communities. And Dr. Banks is a PhD from the University of Kent in social policy and also holds degrees from Dartmouth Medical School and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. We also have with us Mr. Dan Mabe. Dan is the president of the Green Station and founder of the American Green Zone Alliance. That's AGZA. Dan has devoted many years to developing and applying clean battery technology in which emissions-free quiet outdoor maintenance is practiced in noise and emission-sensitive areas. Dan's company is called the Green Station, and he conducts research and development and manufactures and distributes emissions-free outdoor maintenance equipment. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We have both guests.
Good morning, Ellen. Thank you.
Oh, you're there as well. Excellent. Okay, so we're going to hear from both of you. Dr. Jamie, I have had you on an earlier show. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about what the quiet community concept is?
Okay. Quiet Communities is a national nonprofit organization. It's headquartered in Lincoln, Massachusetts, which some of you may know is the home of Walden Pond along with Concord, Massachusetts, and the home of the Mass Audubon Society. I was prompted to found Quiet Communities because in this conservation-oriented town, we noticed that there was a lot more fuel-intensive maintenance going on over the past few years that were bringing noise and pollution in. In speaking with other communities in different parts of the country, I realized that there was really a need for a national organization to provide resources and education and start to help communities address this problem. And as part of that process was actually lucky enough to connect with Dan at the Green Station and now AGZA to really, from a very practical issue, start to address these issues with solutions.
That's excellent because we can talk about the problems, the health issues, the noise issues, et cetera, and then it's wonderful to have on board Mr. Dan and Dan Mabe, the he is the president of the Green Station. So, Dan, why don't you come on board, introduce yourself, and what motivated you to do this project?
Sure. Thank you, and good morning, Ellen. I started the Green Station back in 2007, and it was out of need, personal experiences. I played college tennis, and I went into the tennis teaching profession. And on several occasions, and when I say several, I would say nearly 100, I would be out there teaching and the grounds crews would come and the chaos from the noise and then the fumes coming out of the exhaust were literally sucking the oxygen right out of the air. And after they would leave, we would still have to breathe the emissions, and it just was a horrible experience. So I went home one day, and instead of arguing with management and the workers to try to get them to change their schedules, I decided to do something about it and start the Green Station, which was a zero-emission maintenance company, but that was back in 2007 when equipment, specifically manual and electric equipment, wasn't really evolved enough to handle commercial loads. So that is when I got into research and design and started partnering with various fabricators and aerospace engineers, and then got into the manufacturing game of these really, really amazing cordless electric technologies. And when we built the route up to around close to 70 homes, I splintered the route up to five different guys, and I said, look, you're going to use the electric equipment, and I'm going to certify you, and I'm going to give you a route, and this is a route that is going to pay you very well, on average, maybe 25% more than the clients that use the gas equipment, or prefer the workers that use the gas because of the price. And that is how AGSA came to be, in the concept of green zoning, where we started certifying workers to help facilitate the emission-free equipment to replace the gas.
Okay, so you said a couple of things there, that you actually created a solution to this issue of, you know, a massive use. I mean, I'm just thinking at my house alone, every single Wednesday, we just get inundated with, I don't know, it seems like 100 workers, but maybe it's about 20 of them here, all over the complex that I live in. Just, it's a racket. It sounds like you're at war or something. And what are some of the other problems, Jamie, besides the noise, which I bet everybody can identify with the massive amount of noise that is generated during lawn maintenance? What are some of the other issues?
Well, these are heavy gas guzzlers and emitters of air pollutants. And also kick up all kinds of substances off the ground. As heavy fuel consumers, there's also a great deal of spillage into ground and eventually water sources if this is washed into storm drains. But let's focus on the emissions to start with. These have the types of emissions that come out of leaf blowers are exhaust emissions that include leading carcinogens like benzene, butadiene, formaldehyde, as well as nitrogen oxides, which are an ozone precursor, and then carbon monoxide, which is toxic, and something known as fine particulates, which is now known to be a human carcinogen.
I want to slow down there. Fine particulates, how do you define those?
So particulate matter, in layman's terms, you could call it dust, but then you can subdivide it by size. So there's coarse dust, or larger particles that you see in the air. This is the kind of stuff that you might breathe in, but, you know, if you sneeze, cough, this tends to come out of your system. It doesn't really go down into the lower lung or into the bloodstream. But when you get to a very fine size, and this is tiny, you know, a fraction of the width of a hair, these are particles that can go deep in the lung. They can enter the bloodstream and cause serious disease, including cancer, respiratory disorders, stroke, and cardiovascular disease.
And so these are things that, now, has anyone actually measured this stuff as it blows up into the air due to the use of leaf blowers?
A lot of the literature is general. There is an EPA study that was done in 2006 that examined emissions from two-stroke engines, I think more edgers and trimmers, not leaf blowers in particular, but brought home the point that workers are likely being exposed to very high levels of emissions, which can be harmful to health. What's really needed is a similar study on blowers and the kind of pollution and what that means given workers' close proximity and also other people and pets in the vicinity.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Ellen and Jamie, if I can add, to your point, Jamie, we've been working very closely with various air districts, air management districts who have programs to try to keep our air as clean as possible, and they have found that the ultra-fine particulate, the PMs, that come out of the exhaust of this equipment as a result of inefficiently unburned fuel, there is no mask on the market currently that can protect a worker and then some of course, the general public if they're in close proximity from these ultra-fine particles, which, again, do enter the body, the bloodstream, and essentially don't come out. And that's when you can get into the serious health effects. And I did also want to add, and I'm sorry that I overlooked this in my opening statement, that AGSIS started regionally here in Southern California, but with the help of Jamie and Quiet Communities, we are partnering and now have a national presence.
That's excellent. So you not only have investigated the problem, you also stepped ahead and created a solution, which
yeah,
is great. Because whenever we're bringing up problems, it's always wonderful to have, you know, a sort of an activity that people can participate in to fix the problem. Now, how long, once everyone can visualize this, you know, landscapers come either to their private home, which of course they have control over. They can just stop the landscapers from coming, but they are going to want someone to take care of their lawn, right?
Yes, that's correct. And right now, there are a lot of companies that are using specifically zero emission equipment, no gas. They offer this very unique, right now we can call it a niche service. I would say it's, I would estimate maybe around 1% of the entire industry. However, with the way technology is advancing and the equipment is now able to have the same work productions as the gas equipment, I think with the efforts of organizations like Quiet Communities, yourself, Ellen, bringing this to light to the masses, I think we're going to see and we're poised for a shift in this industry to be more sustainable overall. And I think we're going to see a progression in the next 2, 5, 7 years where we can probably achieve 50% of this entire industry being gas-free.
Well, I would imagine it also takes some activism on the part of end users, which would be the public, creating some kind of outcry rather than just accepting it. Because it's one thing if someone owns their house, they could move towards using this better technology immediately. But if someone does not own their house and they live in some kind of complex like I do, it's much harder to create any kind of change because there are other people who make those decisions.
I'll respond to that, Ellen. I think one thing that has to happen is that public awareness has to be raised to realize that there are other solutions, and it's not just restricted to electric equipment, although that's a very big part. There's, you know, other approaches, sustainable landscaping, manual methods that Dan and Agsa also incorporate into their solutions along with electrical equipment, et cetera. But I think once people realize that there are better alternatives available and there are providers in their community that they have access to, that'll help accelerate things in this direction.
Right. Well, you know what? We're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you so much for listening, listeners. Think about the last time you had this problem at your house where you actually, you know, were trying to read or, you know, walking into your door and you're inundated with these particles and you just think, well, there's nothing I can do about this. But this show is telling you, yes, there is. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And that is, we're calling today's show Leaf Blower Madness. We have two guests on today. We have Jamie Banks, the Executive Director of Quiet Communities, and you can find her and all the work that she has done at quietcommunities.org. And we also have Mr. Dan Mabe. He's the president of the Green Station and founder of the American Green Zone Alliance. And you can find him at www.agza.net. Now, if you're listening to this show in your car and you can't write down all those www's, this show, like all our shows, is archived along with a description where you will see the guest bios as well as a click-through contact at the end of the bio. So you can always find out more. Perhaps you're riding along and then suddenly one day, you know, you're in your house and you're surrounded by this incredible noise as well as the dust particles, the oil that's in the air, and all the other issues that are associated with leaf blowers. So let me ask both guests, we did not always have leaf blowers. I mean, you know, I've been on this planet many decades. Leaf blowers seem to be part of the present reality, but they certainly weren't always. How did they even come to be, and why are they so prolific?
That's a great question. With the assistance of the EPA, actually did an analysis of emissions from lawn and garden equipment, gas-powered lawn and garden equipment, and included in that was a count of how many pieces of equipment are now in the U.S. There are more than 11 million leaf blowers, with commercial activity accounting for a good deal of this now. And having this in hand, its uses seem to have expanded. This is the machine that was originally developed in Japan to distribute pesticides, but it has been adopted by our landscape maintenance industry and is now being used not only for major leaf cleanup, but for removal of debris from hard and soft ground surfaces, cleaning of gutters, cleaning of planting beds, and so forth. It's quite a long list.
Yeah, I think everybody has definitely experienced them. So, you know, it's now also, are there any regulations in place? Because you talk about, like, the particulate matter being really toxic. I know another problem that you talked about is that if any animal has deposited feces anywhere, be that a dog, you know, a domestic pet or wild animal, of course, that also gets bursted into the air and people might inhale that as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, the air velocity that comes out of these blower hoses can easily exceed 200 miles an hour. That airstream is directed at the ground and held inches from the ground. So it's like a tornado and hurricane type stream that is dispersing and aerosolizing all sorts of substances. If it's a lawn, it could be animal feces, pollens, herbicides, pesticides. On a hard surface, it might also include things like diesel soot and brake fluid and things like that that come out of vehicles.
And that goes into the particulate. Now, how long does it stay in the air in terms of when you're actually breathing it in? Is it only for the workers, or, you know, if you walk by a few minutes later, how about that?
I don't, Ellen, think that's a straightforward answer. It's very dependent on particle size. There's actually some science to this showing spatial and time distribution, so I'm not particularly comfortable, but the general sense is that a lot of these substances just don't fall directly to the ground. They can stay suspended in the air from hours to days at a time.
Okay, so certainly. Now, what about the workers? Is anybody, because I see them and they don't even have masks on most of the time, or any ear equipment. What about the sound level and what it can do to our hearing?
Yeah, Dan, why don't you take that?
Okay, I just wanted to back up a little bit for the original question, Ellen. Out here in California, what they used to do is use brooms and then water. They would put high-pressure nozzles on hoses, and now that we have a really severe drought situation, water use is very strictly forbidden, and now we're relying on the gas leaf blower more than ever. But before they were using the blowers, it was brooms and pressurized water. And then as far as the noise goes for the worker and the public, it's just there's been some studies that show that within 10 feet of operation of some of this equipment, it's the equivalent of a jet engine. And I would say on average, the electric equipment is 45 to 55% quieter. Again, depending on the situation that it's being used in, if it's an open space or if it's in an enclosed area that's surrounded by walls. But on average, definitely we can confidently say that it's 50% quieter than their gas counterparts.
So basically, they're using these machines even more in California with the drought, yet I would imagine that that increases the amount of the fine particulate matter that's going to be in the air as well.
Absolutely, and it's especially exacerbated by the heat in the summertime and the ground level ozone. You can just see it. It's a big haze. If you drive up on a hill and you look down, we're kind of set in a bowl out here in the Los Angeles and many parts of Southern California, and it just becomes very challenging. And it's astonishing to me that gas leaf blowers are being used all hours of the day. They start as early as 6 a.m., and you can see them going all the way up until sundown, which can exceed a 12-hour span. And, you know, one particular incident was funny. I don't eat donuts much anymore. I'm trying to cut down, but I would go to the donut shop for my, daily donut and cup of coffee. And there was a leaf blower operator, and the door was open, and he actually used the blower, and the exhaust went inside the donut shop. I closed the door, but actually, after closing the door, I said, no, I better keep it open so we can get some circulation. But that smell, and if you can smell it, they say, then it's there. That smell permeated that donut shop, I would say, for a good 7 minutes that I was there, and I would assume after. But like Jamie said, it's situational. But these are examples that people live with every day out here in California, and then I'm assuming in other parts of the country.
Well, let me tell you some research that I did about this one time. There was a gentleman in California, and his name is Stephen Halpern. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but many of our listeners probably have, because he's the father of New Age music. And he's an artist, a performer, and he writes music, and he really likes it quiet. And way back many years ago, he said, you know, I really feel like these leaf blowers are interfering with my health. I don't feel well, plus they start, like you just shared, Dan, at 6 a.m., and I work late because I'm a musician, and I'm sleeping, and just all kinds of things. He said, perhaps you could do research for me, because I perform research with a dark field microscope. And I did do the research, and what we did is we looked at 100 individuals. We looked at their blood under a microscope, and I monitored, measured, and quantified the ability of their white blood cells to move around, and that's how our immune system works. And what we did was we took these 100 individuals, we split them into two groups, so we had 50 of each. We looked at all of their blood initially. They then, in the experiment, were given one of two sounds. One sound was a leaf blower that they listened to for 5 minutes, and the other sound was Stephen Halpern's music. The particular piece of music we used was the Crystal Suite. Of course, you know, I could have chosen any music, but since Steve had actually supported this research, we chose his music, which is how research is done. So what the outcome was, and we actually have the video of this posted online somewhere on YouTube, I know, is that after listening to the leaf blower, the white blood cells in those individuals completely stopped moving for hours, which means there was a decrease in immune system function in those individuals. While those people who listened to the nice music, and I imagine it might happen with other nice music as well, actually improved their white blood cell motility, how fast they could move around, which relates to your immune system. So that was, fairly apparent change that actually happens. Well, Steve took this, and this was in California. He took it just to his local little town board meeting, and he was able to get a moratorium, not on leaf blowers totally, but on the time that they could use them in his neighborhood, and he got the time changed from 6 a.m. They couldn't start, I think, till 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. That was the only time they were allowed to be used. So, you know, at least that kind of science should be able to modify communities, but I imagine they have to actually get active. Along with you, because just the two of you cannot create this change except where you personally are.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, and I that is a very interesting study, and actually Jamie brought that to my attention, and it just made sense because I and others have said that, you know, when we're around even the big industrial lawnmowers and some of the other equipment, even the hedge trimmers are very loud, and they affect you. They put you in a flight or fight response, and stress levels are accelerated. So I definitely can see the validity of that study. And I would just say that enforcement would be the big challenge. Whenever ordinances are passed, the big challenge is enforcing the ordinances because resources are limited. So the approach of education in outreach with quiet communities, and then action plans and a call to action to physically go in there and create the green zones where gas is not allowed. And I'll give you a couple examples of those later. I think that is the model to move forward.
Now, I believe, Jamie, when we had the previous show, did you say you actually went out and bought brooms and told your gardeners to just use brooms if they wanted to work for you, and they found that, you know, really, that was very easy to do.
Yes, it's not only my experience, but certainly some of my neighbors and people in other communities where, you know, their attitude is that I'm the customer. If I don't want noise and dust on my property, I'm going to ask them not to do this. And, you know, in many cases, the contractor says fine. And goes on and does this without the use of leaf blower. In other cases where there's some resistance, you know, obviously there's other contractors to go to. This is a very competitive business.
Okay, so just, you know, that's a way somebody could create change is saying that, you know, just change it, because it's not like nobody has cleaned up grass clippings before all these noxious leaf blowers were around.
Yeah, Ellen, I think I'd like to add something also as a general perspective. One of the things that has made this issue difficult to get broad-based support around is that people who go to work or who are otherwise occupied and not exposed to this really don't understand what their neighbors are experiencing. And, you know, in order for people really to understand the problem, they have to experience it firsthand or, you know, through a video secondhand. So I think, you know, one thing that people can do also is when they try and approach their neighbors or approach the town, having the video showing what goes on and, you know, making the disturbance real to people who otherwise don't have any experience of it is important. And, you know, with that, there might be greater understanding of the need to have a quiet contractor or to otherwise do their landscaping in a more, you know, in a quieter, cleaner way.
What do you mean by video? Is there a video your organization has made and supplies to communities who might be interested in learning more?
Yes, we have a number of videos on our website now. We actually put together a montage, and we are finalizing that, and we'll have that on the website shortly, just showing what's going on in a lot of towns on either a 3 or 4 season basis, not only in the West Coast, but here in the Northeast as well.
Okay, so that's, you know, somebody, let's say, who it bothers them, like, you know, I'm talking about myself here even, because in the community I live in, again, that happens because I often work from home, and then everybody's sort of gone during the day. They don't necessarily hear these guys, and I'm also worried about the workers. What about the actual workers? Is there any data on health effects that happens to them? Do either of you know?
Well, I mentioned earlier that there was a study that EPA did about the exhaust emissions being put out by several handheld devices, not leaf blowers, but edgers, trimmers, and found that workers are being exposed to high levels of these compounds, which have adverse effects. Apart from that, there's been very little direct studies. There are training programs that the National Association of Landscape Professionals run. That organization was formerly called PLANET, P-L-A-N-E-T. In their training workshop, they acknowledge the very high levels of noise that these machines make and show that even with multiple layers of protection, foam earplugs head-worn ear protection, that you're still getting quite high levels of noise. So it's very difficult to protect against. We also know that a lot of the workers are immigrants, documented, undocumented, who may really be out of the system and, you know, without the ability to track their healthcare data or really have access to it, it's been very hard to do good research.
And they're certainly not going to complain. They're happy to have a day's wage regardless of the toxicity level or the noise level or whatever. So although they may be just as compliant, I know we work with the people who show up at our house, and we actually don't want them to come in here with the blower, so we just stand outside and ask them not to. That's all. And, you know, they're very, very...
We've heard anecdotally, and I'm going to let Dan add to this, that workers are experiencing healthcare problems. We've talked to a couple of the free clinics in Boston where they say, the workers, namely men, are coming in with hearing problems, with something called vibration disease, where they actually lose sensation in their hands and fingers, and this is damage that is irreversible from the vibration caused by the gas combustion and noise vibration of these machines, and respiratory issues as well. You know, and long term there might be other things, but as I say, you know, research is really needed to track and document these ill effects beyond what we know anecdotally or what we're hearing.
Okay, well, you heard that anecdotally, but is there a way to begin to gather that data? Because obviously you heard it from healthcare professionals.
Sure. I mean, with sufficient funding, you could put together what's called a prospective study to start to follow workers and look at the exposure and results relationship. And other things you could do are do what are called cross-sectional studies where, for instance, you would take blood samples from workers and look for metabolites of the exhaust emissions in their to a, quote, normal population or control population.
Well, we're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z because we love to let you know about the wonderful, wonderful shows that you can access, including The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and other great shows here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we'd really like to go in, Dan, particularly with all the good things that we can do about it, which has really been, you know, the focus of your work, and give us some great examples on where the Green Zone Alliance is working. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
My name is David Crow, and I want you to listen to my new show on PRN.FM called The Infectious Myth. Really, the only thing infectious about the show will be the questions that start cascading when the myths about infectious disease come tumbling down. There is no infectious paradigm that, when examined closely with scientific evidence, does not have serious holds. SARS, AIDS, polio, mad cow. We will cover all of these and even stray into other areas of questionable science on occasion. I hope you will listen and even call in. Challenge me if you like. Interesting discussions will result. If you don't catch my show live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, listen to the podcast, and if you use iTunes, do me a favor and rate the show there. That's The Infectious Myth, Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, every week.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And today's topic is leaf blower madness. And we have two knowledgeable guests, Jamie Banks, the Executive Director of Quiet Communities. And if you want a quiet community, go to quietcommunities.org. They have information, videos that you'll be able to access, and studies, and all kinds of things you could bring to your landscaper or to your community who decides which landscapers to bring there and be an educated advocate for your own safety and quiet. And we also have Dan Mabe. He's the president of the Green Station and founder of the American Green Zone Alliance, who has set up the solution. And his website is agza.net. And you can find all this information on this show's archive. You can share it with other people if you'd like them to hear it as well. So, Dan, why don't you come in now, add anything that you'd like, and especially how this solution-oriented process has actually worked in the real world.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, I just want to back up to the last segment and just add one last thing. What's interesting is with the outreach of Quiet Communities and the information that AGSA is putting out, we have workers from cities in California now calling us and actually giving us their actual take on what's going on. And I think as we move forward, workers are going to be more comfortable coming in and giving their experiences and giving us some of that data that we're going to need to move this thing forward on the worker health issue front. And as far as the solutions go, thank you for asking. It all starts with people like Jamie Banks, Bonnie Sager of Huntington Calm, Quiet Communities, going out and looking for the solution. Jamie came out to California, I believe, three, four years ago. I met with her, and I showed her the green zoning model. And I'll use one specific model. It's Malibu Country Mart. It's managed by Cost Real Estate Financial. The sustainability director, Julie Laban, had come across us at a trade show and saw the equipment, and she told us, you know, we've done all of these green and sustainable directives, but we're still using this stuff. Would you come by and see if we could maybe convert to this equipment? So we started with the very first little green zone at Malibu Country Mart, which was less than a quarter acre. And then as it evolved, it now encompasses the entire property, which is just over 6 acres. And it was able to start in the playground area, and now the parking lot and every single square foot of that property is done completely electric. So these are some of the things we've been able to accomplish. And specifically, I would like to mention the gas, the commercial gas-powered equipment we were able to replace there. Before the green zone certification took place, they were using 3 2-stroke gas leaf blowers, 2 21-inch walk-behind self-propelled lawnmowers, 2 2-stroke string trimmers, and 1 2-stroke hedge trimmer. When we were able to replace that with all of the zero-emission equipment, we were able to reduce exhaust emissions nearly 30,000 pounds per year. The gas and oil consumption that was eliminated is nearly 1,000 gallons. Gas costs avoided are just over $4,000. And then there was also a reduction in solid waste, nearly 15 to 20 pounds a year. And that means the solvents and the oil bottles, the spark plugs, the belts, the filters, that all ends up in landfills to maintain small gas engine technology. And then we were also able to estimate that 30 gallons of toxic waste were prevented from being poured into the ground or into the bushes. So that is basically creating the zone where it's all electric and people know when they see the sign that they're going to be able to go in there and relax and enjoy their time within that given area.
So that's a wonderful success story. Now, one of the issues, let's say, with a regular small-time gardener, and, you know, they come around with the trucks and all that stuff, what is this going to mean to them? I mean, what would be the economic advantage for them or the economic motivation for them to make the investment in this new, less polluting equipment?
Well, I would say cost of operation. When you are paying for kilowatt hours to recharge batteries instead of paying for gas and then all of the oils and all of the maintenance associated with gas equipment, we did a 9-month beta test with True Green Land Care and the Department of Public Works for the city of South Pasadena at Garfield Park. And the branch manager, Joe Espinoza, for True Green Land Care at that time, he was able to determine even if his workers took 20% longer to do the Garfield Park, to maintain Garfield Park with the electric equipment, that he was still able to increase profit margins because the cost of operating the equipment was so substantially lower than the gas equipment. And then we also found in that study that the maintenance frequency for the electric equipment was 1/130th of the frequency compared to their gas counterparts. So cost of operation and less frequent repair necessity seemed to be the biggest economic advantage.
Wow. You know, we're actually coming shortly to the end of our show, but one thing is, I believe that one of the motivating factors that can make this happen is the public and people, because look at something like buying organic food. Buying organic food used to cost a whole lot more, and now it doesn't cost that much more. And yet its availability has blossomed. It's tremendously available than what it was several years ago, and that's because of consumer desire. So I would say by increasing the consumer desire, and you do have the solution, and you actually have data that can support someone switching to this as a business model, I imagine there's a little cost up front, but if that's what like a whole neighborhood wants, they're going to also have more work. So And shortly, within a couple of years, these maintenance issues and less cost of maintaining the equipment will definitely make it be a better economic model as well as a better health model.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Ellen. And there are very active community groups. Dan mentioned Bonnie Sager, Lucy Weinstein, Dr. Lucy Weinstein, both of Huntington, founded a group called Huntington Calm. They are very active in trying to get the town of Huntington to regulate and promote the use of gas-free maintenance.
Right. So that's, you know, one particular example, but I imagine as just like anything, once people learn about it, you know, especially what about all the asthma that children have and the allergies that they have, once they see that there's a link to this increased particulate matter and that decreasing it could actually be helpful, you know, that's the way this information can spread.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think engaging the medical societies with this issue is very important to help make it more visible. And, you know, as you say, that's a way to increase public awareness and create some change.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us. As we go off, just give your best contact information to our listeners.
Sure, Jamie, please. Well, I'll let you end, Jamie. You can go to www.agza.net for more information about the American Green Zone Alliance.
Right, and for Quiet Communities, www.quietcommunities.org.
Okay, well, thank you both of you for an informative hour, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.